Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Barbara Bogave. So the other day I got stuck in a terrible traffic jam, and I never saw anything that would explain what the problem was. Finally, I got to work and I said to my colleague Laura, geez, the traffic was hellish today. She said she had her own problems on the same highway. Her toddler in the back seat had tossed his beloved Bob the Builder doll out the window, and she actually hit the brakes, pulled off the road, and raced back to the doll to rescue it. Now, my friend Laura is, truth be told, a real hottie. And she was wearing a sundress that day with a plunging neckline. I started thinking, maybe Laura was the cause of the whole jam. Maybe that's all it takes. One sexy babe running high speed in a halter along the expressway and a bunch of guys slowing down to enjoy the view. That's the confounding thing about traffic. You should be able to predict it by scientific means, but then something supremely human and unpredictable happens which gums up the works. Traffic engineers know this all too well, and since the 50s, they've tried to build models which take into account the vagaries of nature and human nature and their effect on traffic patterns. Now, with the aid of computers and new scientific theories of chaos and complexity, traffic modeling is seeing some results. But producer Richard Paul says science alone won't be able to avert your next big traffic jam.
Okay, first off, here's a bunch of stuff you probably don't know about the roads you drive on every day. First, the traffic lights don't change right when you get up to them just to tick you off. There actually is a system.
If you have 10 traffic signals, we try to balance out the stops and delays in each direction.
Next, did you know that there are people who actually know how many cars and trucks there are on the highway at any given time, how many people speed, how many people drive way below the posted speed limit, and how many people weave in and out of the lanes? They know all this, and they can use it to actually change the way the highway is constructed to make things flow better.
You can determine if it's an aggressive type of driver or is it a leisurely type of driver.
And finally, did you know that there is a guy, one guy, who controls almost every single traffic light in the state of Maryland? Your state probably has someone like this too. Every single traffic light.
Now what you're seeing right now is this particular intersection. If I need to favor the main road, I would make my timing changes.
So, that's a bunch of stuff you don't know about the traffic you drive in every morning. Now, let's shift from what you don't know to the things you probably know all too well. First, you know that when it comes to roads, bridges, and highways, the proponents of building have always promised more than they can deliver.
Roads are getting better. Many highways have been designed that eliminate dangers and delays. The wide, smooth-surfaced highway speed all motorists on their way.
The other thing we know too well about the traffic you drive in every day is the massive gap between that hype and the reality.
Matt! What? It's 7:05. We've got to go. You have to brush your teeth.
The American family prepares to leave for work and school on the highway of tomorrow.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got carried away with the hype. This is about the reality of roads.
I want to leave in 5 minutes.
Letty is a working mom with 2 kids. She commutes to work from her home in Silver Spring, Maryland, an old bedroom community just outside Washington, D.C.
All right, tell Dad that we're leaving. Sam, we're out of here!
Her commute is probably a lot like yours, but here's the part it's safe to say you didn't know. Almost every inch of the way along Letty's route in the morning, there's either someone who knows where she's coming from, where she's going, what she's driving, how she's driving, and the impact it's all having on the thousands of other cars around her.
Come on, Maddie, we gotta go!
This is not Big Brother stuff. These people don't really care who Letty is individually unless she gets into an accident. They know her in the abstract. She's tracked by number-crunching statisticians and computer technicians who take statistics and build them into animated models designed to, well, basically make sure that she can drive 40 miles an hour instead of 20 miles an hour in a place where the posted speed is 55.
Damn this traffic jam. How I hate to be late. It hurts my motor to go so. Damn.
The Washington, D.C. area is not like a lot of other places in America, with a million stretches of highway going through the city and out into the suburbs. Because of political wrangling, hey, it's Washington, as the region's population has exploded, the road network hasn't even come close to keeping pace. Since 1964, the backbone of the road system has been I-495, the Capital Beltway.
Well, good morning once again, and the rush hour has...
As a result, depending on who you ask, these days the Washington, D.C. area has the second worst traffic in the country behind Los Angeles. Jerry Edwards has been a traffic reporter in the Washington, D.C. area for 19 years.
There are definitely more backups, and the backups that we have a tendency to be more severe. People are frustrated. They call up screaming. There's telephone rage to traffic reporters as well. And it's very frustrating because we don't control the traffic. We just tell you how bad it is.
Given that, the Washington area is one of the best places to examine an extensive collection of scientific models now being used around the country, all aimed at making your commute just a little bit better. Ron Kirby is Director of Transportation Planning for COG, the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments, the people who do this modeling in the Washington area.
We have all of the traffic networks, population, employment characteristics, all coded into our traffic models. So you can improve people's access to jobs, shopping, or whatever by improving their ability to move around, or by land use planning that brings those activities closer together, or some combination of both.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel.
We are now making the right into the entrance of a Montgomery Blair High School off of Colesville Road, and these kids take forever to get out of the car. All right, don't forget your report card. I know I've told you 1,000 times. Have a good day, okay? See ya, hon.
Ever since 1955, the people who plan and manage roads and highways in America have used mathematical analysis to figure out where and how much to build. And since the early 80s, they've used a different sort of math to help them know how to keep things flowing. The tool that helps them know where to build is called a gravity model. The one that keeps things flowing is based on what's called chaos or complexity theory. Gravity theory looks at the relative importance of population and distance. Ron Kirby.
We are looking at a number of jobs you can reach within 45 minutes of a particular residential location, let's say. And that's a function not only of your ability to move, but also of the land use distribution.
These models look at where people travel, and we'll tell you about how they work in a minute. First, though, chaos and complexity theory, which, succinctly put, helps you get someplace faster by taking all the bad stuff out of the way.
We're now on the entrance ramp to the Beltway. Again, it's bumper-to-bumper traffic.
Keep me moving. Woo. Beep, beep.
Now we are moving, and this is actually a fairly good day on the Beltway. We're probably going about 25 miles an hour. I would bet my bottom dollar that this is going to stop when we get up to Holy Cross Hospital, because the ebb and flow of the traffic is that you get to go 30 to 40 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden everything comes to a stop and you've got to...
You know what Letty's talking about, and if you've ever wondered why it happens, the answer can be found in chaos and complexity theory. Irene Sanders is Executive Director of the Washington Center for Complexity and Public Policy.
It's a collection of ideas about how systems change, how they form, move, grow, and evolve over time. Chaos theory really grew out of math and physics. Complexity science is more biologically based. Chaos theory really is a way of looking at a system that has many components that are constantly interacting and asking, how does it change? What are those small things that can create big results?
It could be a completely clear day like this, and all of a sudden you'll come to a standstill a mile up, and you'll have no idea why you're in a standstill until you drive by the car that is stalled on the side of the road.
Complexity theory then relates to systems that are more adaptive. In other words, they really respond and change according to the environment in which they operate. Our ecosystem, our immune system, the World Wide Web. In these systems, you really can't predict the future. But what you can do is look at the overall pattern. Where are new things beginning to emerge? How can you influence the future of an adaptive system? And if traffic is adaptive, what you're trying to do is influence in the direction of a more efficient traffic flow every hour during rush hour, both morning and afternoon.
Part of chaos theory is something called the butterfly effect, the idea that a butterfly flapping its wings in one part of the world can cause a hurricane in another.
The butterfly effect says that if a system is sensitive to small things, those small things can be amplified and create big results in the future.
The concept here is that by making incremental changes in the larger system, adapting the way the traffic lights change or putting up certain signs, you can minimize the number of times that drivers have to slow to a crawl. Jean-Yves Point du Jour is a traffic engineer at the State of Maryland's Intelligent Transportation System Center.
If the technology was not here, and if we were not here, I think you should have a parking lot on the Beltway every morning.
The traffic this morning actually looks like it's moving at a little faster rate than what it normally is. So maybe we're
this
we're
is
getting on
the capital beltway I-495, and we are looking at a freeway simulation software that shows the movements of traffic flow throughout several interchanges.
Syed Rahwanji is another traffic engineer with Maryland State Highways. Sitting in front of a computer screen in the Intelligent Transportation Center, he looks at an animated computer model. On the screen, there's the Capitol Beltway all laid out.
What you are seeing is little dots on the screen that's moving. If you zoom in, you actually will see the number of lanes on the freeway with dots moving at the speeds of the actual simulator. For
this
example,
model of the Beltway is drawn from data collected from various sources and programmed into a computer. Irene Sanders.
You've got all the components that go into traffic, weather, lights, people, different driving habits, different ages. And then the researchers would say, well, what would happen if we added a tornado? Or what would happen if we closed down one ramp on the Beltway because of an accident? So you can test situations prior to actually implementing them so that you hopefully will get the best results.
I can click on one of these dots and it will show me the length of the vehicle, the speed it's going through. These are some of the tricks that you can get out of these models.
Which brings us to the more practical side of intelligent transportation systems. It's not just computer models. They also have TV cameras all over the highway system, projecting images back to a command center that looks like Mission Control at NASA, where they dispatch fleets of vans that can remove stalled cars at a moment's notice.
The traffic is flowing at about, 50 miles an hour. However, all it takes is one car to break down.
There's your butterfly effect. Again, transportation engineer Jean-Yves Pointe-du-Jour.
We realized way back in the 1980s that most of the time the traffic backup is a result of a simple incident. So what we do is we try to detect incident, try to find them out, and then to remove them. We call the tow truck, the police come there, they do the investigation, and they're out of there.
They track the number of vehicles riding on the highways, of course, and they say that with all of this technology, 24 million more vehicles are passing through the system in Maryland every hour. Maybe they're not going fast, but again, as Jean-Yves Pointe-du-Jour says,
if you did not have those things, you wouldn't be able to drive at all.
So that's how math keeps you moving. Now to the rest of it, how statisticians and technicians work with old guys sitting in the weeds to count, analyze, map, and model every trip in the region to help politicians answer questions like, should we put a bridge over there?
It's about 7:30 in the morning. If this were 8:30 in the morning, this would be bumper-to-bumper traffic, and you would not be going 40 miles an hour on the Beltway.
There's a famous saying. They say it comes from Yogi Berra. Here it is, delivered by two guys who know traffic.
Nobody uses the Beltway anymore. That's right, it's too crowded.
Turns out that's sort of true. If a road becomes too congested, it'll cause people to drive over it more slowly and, over time, seek out alternative routes. This is just one of the uncommon truths turned up by transportation modelers when they do what's called travel demand forecasting. Though a lot's changed about America's love affair with its roads over the past 50 years, travel demand forecasting has not. Here's Ron Kirby of COG.
In many ways, the forecasting and travel modeling process that we're using today is structurally very similar to what was used in the 60s. We divide the area up into small traffic zones. We survey population and employment in those zones. We develop forecasts of population and employment. We code up highway and transit networks, put them into our traffic models, and forecast future demand.
Roads have been engineered that are as safe as the modern automobile.
In the 50s and early 60s, the focus was mostly on providing additional highway capacity. And where that capacity should be located.
Roads that are not so modern as the traffic they carry cause congestion.
There wasn't a lot of focus on transit or on ways of managing demand for travel.
Curves have been scientifically banked. Lighting experts have contributed their study of the problem of lighting street intersections.
Today, Ron Kirby says,
transportation is more and more seen as the servant of other objectives, as opposed to an end in itself.
But the model remains the same. It begins when COG sends out letters asking people if they'd like to be part of what's called an origin destination study. If they agree, they're asked, just like a Nielsen family, to fill out a diary. Mark Moran is a principal transportation engineer at COG.
Okay, in the morning I did this trip by this mode. Then the person is generally telephoned, and they're asked about their travel diary.
After the survey's done, it has to be validated. How do they confirm that people are driving where they say they are? The answer, honest to God, they actually hire people to stand on the side of the road and count.
So there's one in there. There's one in that car.
Edward Ross is sitting inside a parked van along a really ugly stretch of road just south of the U.S. Capitol building. As cars pass through the red light 20 yards away, he keeps track on a laptop of how many people are in each car.
See, there's two in there. You just teach your fingers where the keys are. You don't have to bother looking down.
It's based on these numbers gathered by six guys on the side of the road that policymakers will decide the fate of every road, bridge, bus, and subway car in the Washington, D.C. area.
I just do it and, you know, have fellowship with the guys. It's just fun.
Once Edward Ross's numbers are checked against the origin destination data, the modelers are ready to do their work. It's a four-step process. In step one, they divide the region into 2,000 zones, and then they estimate the number of trips to and from each one. Then it's time for step two, where modelers invoke gravity theory. When they look at the trips, Mark Moran says they talk about the trips in terms of attraction. In planetary science, they say,
the greater the two planets are, the greater the gravitational pull between them.
In the case of traffic,
when you have two zones that are large in size, that means they have lots of jobs, households, or both, they'll generate a lot of trips between them.
In step three, they ask, do people drive alone, carpool, or use transit? They also look at the cost of making the trip, the time it takes to make the trip, and various aspects of the person taking the trip, like their income. In step four, you know where people are going, you know how they're going, now you place them within a system. They call it a network, a highway network, or the transit network. Then they look at the quickest route between all the points in the region. That's where they get to that whole nobody goes there, it's too crowded thing. Mark Moran.
As a link gets more and more congested, your speeds will drop. Now, people don't think, okay, first I'm going to generate a trip. Now, where will I distribute my trip to? Now what mode will I take? Now I'm going to assign myself to the minimum time path between these two. People don't think in that manner. People make a lot of these decisions all at one time. But it's been found that these models replicate what people do.
At this point, it's fair to ask, how does going through these four steps tell politicians, okay, we need a wider bridge, or you need to run eight-car subway trains instead of four-car trains? Here's COG's Ron Kirby.
We're in a very good position to be able to answer what-if types of questions.
Say the policymakers in a county are thinking of putting in a new rail line.
We're able to go back into our computer models and, you know, code in a rail line, get some expert input on what impact that would have on land use and the distribution of population and employment, and then run the analysis and come out with the traffic patterns.
In fact, sometimes the calculations will shock you and come out exactly the opposite of what you expected.
Let's head south to see if we've cleared out the Wilson Bridge. Live pictures. Looks like a little congestion right side of your screen.
The Woodrow Wilson Bridge is a huge span across the Potomac River between Maryland and Virginia. The two states and the federal government are planning to spend a lot of money to improve the bridge. An example of that political wrangling we talked about, a few years ago, environmentalists and neighbors were making demands this shouldn't just be a bridge for cars, put in a rail line. They did travel demand forecasting models and found out that building a subway line could actually make car traffic worse.
We found that that new development generated not only transit trips, but it generated a lot of auto trips, which were on the bridge.
When you think about the weight of the decisions made on the basis of these forecasts, it's important to ask how accurate they are. Ron Kirby says they do a good job, although
one of the things that models have a very difficult time dealing with is changes in lifestyle patterns over time.
Things like telecommuting or the popularity of trucks and RVs, those kinds of things can really throw modelers a curve.
If you go back 30 years, one of the major things they missed was the increasing participation of women in the workforce and the smaller household sizes. If you compare the forecast in the mid-60s for the year 2000 to what actually occurred, the household forecast was actually right on target, but the population figures they had, we're not going to reach until 2010. And the employment forecast they had for 2000, we passed that number in 1985. So you can see how out of whack you can get if you miss a fundamental lifestyle change.
And it's not just because they guess wrong.
All measures have error. and we just accept that.
Dr. Jim Lang is a consultant research scientist to the Pacific Institute for Research and Evaluation. He says the nature of error in traffic science is not widely understood. Take, for example, the Origin Destination Survey, the core of travel demand forecasting. Here's what Lang says is overlooked. When they did the poll, was the survey sample biased in its selection? A phone survey will get 30 to 40% compliance. And Lang says that should make you wonder, what are the other 60 to 70% thinking? COG's Mark Moran agrees, but says,
we do a number of things to minimize non-response bias.
He says COG relies on a highly trained core of interviewers and that they contact homes numerous times to get their participation.
There's a benefit in being persistent in trying to get particular individuals to respond.
And he adds that as long as you call enough people, even if only 30% respond, you still have a valid sample. Lang also warns there can be problems when localities send people out to count cars in order to assess traffic load.
We found that surveyors tend to make improvements to the design. They do things that they feel increases their efficiency, but in fact reduces the validity of the data that you're trying to get.
Moran concedes that is a possibility.
But we do have historical data that we can check things against. And we can look up and sort of check it, and if it looks unreasonable, we can recount.
This is a program about science, but of course, science aside, there's another factor in land use planning that trumps any discussions that go on in the laboratory. We've alluded to it throughout the program. It's politics. Science may hold the answers to our questions, but everywhere you turn, it seems, the science of traffic management runs up against the politics. Here is yet another example.
Live pictures of the American Legion Bridge, right side.
The American Legion Bridge crosses the Potomac River between a county in Virginia that's generally more pro-development and a county in Maryland that's, generally speaking, slow growth. The bridge is well known by commuters like Letty as a place to be avoided whenever possible.
And as you can see up ahead, the traffic is starting to stop. And that is due to the fact that people are coming up to the American Legion Bridge. And I'm glad I'm not going that way.
The problem is that business and housing have grown along the river, but the road system hasn't. As a result, people are now forced to drive far south, cross the bridge, and then drive north to work. For the past 15 years or so, there's been talk about building another span across the Potomac to make that commute a straight shot. The route would be called the Tech Way. Lon Anderson is Director of Public Affairs at AAA Mid-Atlantic.
You can look at it and say, gosh, it's been 40 years since we built a bridge, and there's been all this growth up and down the Potomac River. Wouldn't it be great if we could connect those high-tech communities? And clearly, a lot of high-tech workers who live in Montgomery County are going to Northern Virginia and vice versa. Makes a lot of sense. But do we have the facts? No.
What he's alluding to is that lately the debate over the bridge has shifted backwards. It's gone from whether or not to build the bridge to whether or not to study building the bridge.
What AAA Mid-Atlantic would like to have is what I think the politicians would very much like to have. That's the best facts available so that they can make decisions.
Well, not all politicians. Nancy Dasek is a county council member in Montgomery County, Maryland.
We have worked very hard to contain sprawl in this county and keep it out of that area. To send a new road and a new bridge through that area will destroy it. This council, to the person, does not support another bridge.
And as for Lon Anderson's contention that
we ought to be giving those politicians the very best information to make such critical decisions,
Councilwoman Dasek says that's nonsense.
Our own planning board had a study. There have been other studies, and none of them have shown more than a 7 or 8% decrease in traffic. A number of groups have looked at this issue in hopes that they would come up with the right answer. And it hasn't come out that way, because if you build one bridge or two bridges, the American Legion Bridge will still fail.
We are now in the area where origin and destination studies and gravity theory leave the realm of science and enter the world of political science. In a general sense, Dasek says that when it comes to something as controversial as this, you can never separate out science from politics.
On the one hand, you have people that are in favor of the bridge. On the other hand, other people are saying, why would we do this when it would have such a minimal impact on traffic and would destroy communities.
A U.S. congressman from Virginia had been pushing for a federally funded study to see what impact the Techway might have, but Dasik points out
it was his own constituents that beat up on him so badly that he backed off.
The federal study's now dead, but a short while back, two other Virginia congressmen weighed in with the state's new governor, and it looks like that worked.
Now, Virginia Governor Mark Warner is voicing support for a $400,000 feasibility study for such a bridge.
But people on both sides of the debate are wary of the Virginia study. Here's Lott Anderson of AAA.
I worry about studies done by either state because each state then that has an oar in the water would see an inherent bias.
Someday, maybe there'll be a study where all the origin destination data points in the right direction. But even then, it doesn't mean there'll be a bridge built. COGS, Ron Kirby.
The longer we wait with those studies, the harder it gets to find a location where such a roadway could be put without major disruption.
See, even though the origin and destination studies say we need more built, it rarely gets done because while everyone agrees there's a problem, that's about as far as it goes in terms of consensus. Maybe the answer is wider roads and bigger bridges, though they could just fill up with traffic. Maybe more mass transit, though running a rail line 20 miles out of the city could just convince people that they could live in West Virginia and still commute.
And I'm going to pull into my garage.
Back in Silver Spring, Letty's younger son, Nick, is playing SimCity. That's a computer game where kids construct a city from scratch, building roads, bridges, and power plants, and when they get it wrong, paying the price, social, environmental, financial, and political.
I'm going to put a ballpark for kids, and I'm going to have it easily accessible with roads. So
it's good to know that there are kids tackling the building of bridges, roads, and highways in junior high school. It gives you hope. After all, if they're already working with computer models at 12, maybe when they grow up to be urban planners and politicians, they'll do a better job of laying out places to live than their parents and grandparents have.
We're going to have to build an intersection, and the traffic won't be as heavy, say, as it.
Traffic Jam was produced by Richard Paul and funded by the National Science Foundation. Archival footage was supplied by the Internet Moving Images Archive at archive.org. Irene Sanders is the author of Strategic Thinking and the New Science, Planning in the Midst of Chaos, Complexity, and Change, published by the Free Press. We love to hear from you, and that includes hearing your worst nightmare traffic stories. Send them to us at our email address, talkback, that's one word, talkback at soundprint.org. Next week on Soundprint, a young Australian, fed up with the media's portrayal of youth, fights back by using the media against itself. Culture jamming and the strange but true story of a big lie. Join us for Young People Against Heavy Metal T-shirts next time on Soundprint. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU and American University. Perhaps you were stuck in traffic listening to this show and were so enthralled you'd like to hear it again, which you can do by visiting us online at soundprint.org. CDs cost money. They'll cost you $12.50. If you'd like to order a CD with a credit card, call us toll-free at 1-888-38-TAPES. That's 1-888-38-TAPES or order online at soundprint.org. Soundprint is technical director Anna Maria DeFreitas, associate producer Sesh Cunnan, and sound engineer Alexandra Gardner. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Barbara Bogave.